Welcome to Run With It, Canada's running fitness and health program. On this month's episode, I was in conversation with Dr. Bob Weil about choosing the right shoe, so stay tuned for that. We also have a segment on the BC Sports Hall of Fame. But first, let's go to our Doctor's Corner segment. Check this out. Welcome back, Dr. Medeshi. Today's topic is how to keep our eyes healthy and fit despite aging.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for having me. It's good to be talking to you again.
Yeah. So how do we do that? How do we, you know, as we age, you know, we can't help it getting older, but our eyes, how can we, you know, keep them as healthy as possible?
That's a good question. I don't think there's a magic solution that I've figured out in my professional career years. But just like we need to make the effort to keep our body healthy, active, well-nourished, properly nourished, we do the same thing with the eyes. So what benefits our body will obviously in turn benefit their eyes. Staying active, physically fit, making sure you're mindful of your diet, eating the right things, and, you know, being cheating every now and then is not a bad thing. But what we do for a body repercusses in better health for many of the organs, including your eyes.
Mm. What about, are there some foods that are like carrots, for example?
You know, I'm not going to say no to that, but I'm not going to say that we should rely solely on carrots to be important for our vision. It's maybe a little bit of a wives' tale now. Vitamin A is very important to our eye health, of course, but most of us in the North American diet, we get enough vitamin A. But, you know, you hear parents telling kids still, and my parents did the same, if you eat a lot of carrots, you won't need glasses. I don't know if that's true. I think, and I come back full circle to saying a well-balanced diet is what's most important. And ensure you have enough vegetables and fruits, antioxidants. You know, carbs are not a bad thing. We get scared of carbs, but it's a healthy thing and part of our diet. Now, certain foods that we do recommend when necessary. For example, when patients have high risk factors to macular degeneration, there's a lot of buzz about the word lutein, which is a carotenoid. And carotenoids are not something our body produces. It's something that we ingest and that we're born with or that we ingest. And that carotenoid's important for the preservation and of our macula, which is where our central vision is focused inside the eye. So it's not that meaning everybody needs to take high doses of lutein, which is found in green leafy vegetables, colorful vegetables like, you know, red peppers, yellow peppers, kale, squash, things of that nature. But if we know that you have either high risk factors, which may be you're a smoker, you're diabetic, you're above a certain age, you have family members with macular degeneration, you're female, or you're Caucasian, light-skinned, or you have light color irises, then you're at higher risk of developing macular degeneration. And that's when we would tell our patients that, hey, listen, we should look at some supplementations for carotenoids or lutein specifically, and we can either recommend stuffing. But in the meantime, for the general population, just eat a well-balanced diet that has a lot of those vegetables. And then there's a concept of antioxidants. Antioxidants found in, you know, blueberries and a lot of fruits are very important, a lot of superfoods have that too, are very important to the general well-being of your body, avoiding excessive oxidative stress. And with the eyes, that's important as well. But is there something that everybody should be taking? Not necessarily again. As far as another supplement that I do talk about a lot with my patients is omega-3s. I do find there's a benefit to omega-3s with certain patients. Now, again, we talk about details. It's not just any omega-3 and not just for every patient. Patients that suffer from certain levels of chronic dry eyes or ocular surface concerns, omega-3s can be a really strong additive to your approach to managing that dry eye. A, because it's an anti-inflammatory, and inflammation deals heavily in the surface of the eye with patients with very dry eyes. And omega-3s are also, they help improve the quality of serum or secretions that are coming out of the eyes. So again, not just any omega-3, when you are consulting with your doctor of optometry, they can advise on which omega-3s, which formulations work most efficiently, and that can supplement your diet to properly address those concerns.
What age is it that you start, you know, is it in your 40s or?
40, when you start?
Losing, like, you know, becoming like your eyes are getting older.
that's a good question. You know, everybody wants to push that a decade later on in life, and I'm not old yet. There's different things of our eyes that age differently. So if we're talking about your vision, the most common thing that we talk about is the 40s, so that 40 landmark. Because when you hit that age, something called presbyopia starts. And presbyopia, in Latin translated, it means aging eye. It's when we start to lose the ability to focus in at things at near. So a loss of accommodation or focusing ability. And that typically starts in the early 40s. And so people think that is the biggest aging aspect of your eyes. But then you have elements like cataracts, which is often seen around that sixth decade of light or 60 years old. Or major eye diseases or leading cause of blindness like macular degeneration and glaucoma. That can be start, we can see that at any age, but again, that 60, 65 year old kind of benchmark is when we start to see the prevalence increase.
So it's best to see an eye doctor like yourself, like twice a year, once a year, or does it depend?
As much as I'd love to see many of my patients twice a year, I think we don't need to do that. We follow a old kind of saying, check yearly, see clearly. And especially for kids and seniors, so anybody below 18 and anybody above the age of 65, we highly encourage coming annually for your eye exam. If somebody's coming to see me at the age of 50 years old or 40 years old and they have very healthy eyes, minimal change, we will book them every 2 years. Now, if there's medical conditions that we're monitoring, be it macular degeneration or glaucoma or other ocular surface diseases, we may see these patients every 6 to 12 months.
So get checked and you will have symptoms, right?
Yeah, for the most part, most ocular conditions have symptoms. But things like glaucoma, which is the second leading cause of blindness, is asymptomatic until it's advanced. So again, just coming in routinely, we can be on top of things, ensuring your ocular health and your visual well-being.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
I'd like you to come back.
Be more than happy to, anytime.
Well, we're back at the BC Sports Hall of Fame, and it's been around about 30 years, and I'm excited to have back on the show, and Seth's a supporter of the shows, and Jason Beck is the curator of the BC Sports Hall of Fame, and he's here to tell us what's new at the hall, and welcome, Jason.
Yeah, thanks, Christine. It's great to be back. We're back. We're open. It's our comeback summer, so we're welcoming everybody back into the building. See what's new at the Hall of Fame this summer. We've been excited for this, been waiting for this a long time. So we've been working in the background on a lot of projects that we're excited to share with everybody.
Yes. So coming up is the inductees.
Yeah. So in July, we will be honoring the 2020 class of inductees whose induction was postponed last year, but we're honoring them now, class that includes Kirk McLean, Alex Steeda, the cyclist, Brent Johnson from the BC Lions, Sonia Gaudette, who's a world championship curler, Jeff Francis, a major league pitcher. But we're excited to be honoring them. We'll have displays in the Hall of Champions here on the 2020 class. They'll be honored in a broadcast event that'll air on Global. And then later we'll be available on the Hall of Fame's website. And we're looking forward to a virtual induction honoring this amazing class and then kind of kicking off the summer from there.
Yes, and here we are in the Hall of Champions. How great is that?
Yeah.
So how does it work for, nominating an inductee?
It's a bit of a process, and it's an annual ongoing process. So we take nominations from the public. Any person can nominate any other person or team. So it's a completely open process. We accept those nominations to June 30th of every year. So our nomination deadline is coming up. And then once the nominations are in, we have a selection committee that'll meet usually in September, and they'll review all nominations across the various categories, athlete, builder, team, pioneer, media, and our WAC Bennett Award. Usually we get on average about 125 nominations. So there's a lot to go through. That committee will review everything on their own and then come together in one meeting and vote. And then from that meeting, which is usually one of the more exciting days of the year because there's a lot of discussion that goes into it. And sometimes it gets heated and animated. And You know, people are very passionate about who they feel should be inducted into the BC Sports Hall of Fame. And then we have a decision that's made by the end of the meeting, and we announce the class usually in the fall of every year. There'll be a media announcement here at the Hall of Fame. And then the class is usually, in a normal year, inducted in the spring of the following year. So that the next induction in person, we're hoping, will be in 2022.
Yes, in person, that would be great. Yeah. You know? So it's going to be airing on Global. Yep. And is there MCs?
Yeah, so we've got two MCs for the event. Lynn Kanuka, one of our honored members and a great runner, who's been on your show, of course. And Perry Sulkowski will be the other MC.
Oh, wonderful. And so tell us what's new at the exhibit.
Well, we've got a bunch of things that are probably new to people that haven't been able to visit us for the past year, year and a little bit. We did a refresh on our Greg Moore Gallery in March of 2020, so that's still very new. There'll be a racing simulator that'll be installed, we're hoping, in later this summer. So that'll be brand new.
Oh, wow. Racing simulator.
Yeah.
Cool.
Virtual racing simulator will be as if you're in the car, going 200 plus miles per hour. It'll be great. So there's that. We installed a sport fashion exhibit last summer, which is still new for a lot of people because a lot of haven't been able to see it. And that showcases all sorts of different fashion and weird and wild outfits that athletes have worn over the years in BC. We've got a dragon boat exhibit that opened earlier this year, which again, still quite new because we were closed for part of the spring. But being open now, we've all these new exhibits. The dragon boat exhibit in particular, I think people will enjoy because it's one of those Vancouver events like the Sun Run, like the Greek festival that everybody looks forward to each year. It involves a lot of people. It's one of those kind of signature Vancouver events, but people don't know a lot about it. It has a lot of history. It goes back to Expo 86 in Vancouver, mm-hmm. one of the largest dragon boat events outside of China in the world. So it's a big deal, and we've got everything on display from a full-size 40-foot dragon boat to medals and trophies and video of participants, and people will really enjoy that. If you're a fan of dragon boat racing, you're going to love it. If you don't know anything about dragon boat racing, you're going to learn something. So.
Yes, I mean there's something for everyone. I mean, yeah. From field hockey to running to the Terry Fox as well. It's just a wonderful place. And if people want to, come down, should they book online?
Yeah, so we're still taking online bookings and keeping that 15-minute window for people just so that we can maintain physical distancing and maintain a safe experience for everybody. So available online at bcsportshall.com. The other nice thing that's also happening in the building right now that we're partnering with is the Wings and Wizards experience that's down in BC Place, a virtual experience where kind of like a Harry Potter-esque experience that kids love. And so if you're coming down for Wings and Wizards, come down and visit the Hall of Fame or vice versa.
Wonderful. Thanks again, Jason, and we'll have you come back.
I'd love to. Always enjoy being on with you, Christine.
I'm excited to make an announcement that I'll be doing a 5-minute segment every month on my show, Run With It, a running fitness and health program. And Dr. Bob Weil will be coming on the show every month to talk about running, footwear, injury prevention, and he's here to talk about what he does. And he's a sports doctor for the show, radio host of The Sports Doctor. Welcome, Dr. Bob.
Christine, hey, it's nice to be here. You know, you and I have both done each other's radio shows a few different times. And we wanted to include the Sports Doctors In segment as part of your presentation. As a sports podiatrist, Christine, you know, the role of the foot in sports, whether we're talking about shoes, whether we're talking about running injuries, whether we're talking about high performance, all of these things are very, very important to people who either are running, to stay in shape, they're running recreationally, or they're very, very serious, and they might be competitors, and they want to know about two steps quicker. So the goal of the segment, and as you know, I've been hosting the Sports Doctor for decades, and we talk about all important information in the area, whether it's nutrition, whether it's sports psychology, we call it the mental game on the Sports Doctor. And for those listening, my show is live every Wednesday on bbsradio.com/the Sports Doctor, where we talk about all of these different topics. Yeah, but we want to pay big attention to the world of running and all of these topics where we can compare notes and try to do two things that everybody cares about, Chris. Whatever, whether you're the runner themselves, their parents, their coach, superstars, to recreational grandmas. Two things. One, can we prevent problems? Can we prevent running-related injuries? My feet hurt, my knees hurt, my back hurts, everything hurts. And can we enhance performance in those who are interested? And those are the things that we're going to be paying big attention to in my participation with the Sports Doctors in and the whole Run With It world. So, hey, you got a question, Christine?
Yes. The Sports Doctor is in. And are the most expensive shoes the best?
You know, it's a good question. And I form it this way. Buy a name brand. There are many top brands of running shoes. This is not a place you want to try to find special deals. So not necessarily is the most expensive shoe the best at all. I had a colleague years ago participated in a book that we did. It was all about running shoes. And the front cover was a collage with about 20 brands. And the point was, there is no best shoe. So I recommend every runner include podiatry in an evaluation of your foot mechanics. Great recommendation involving shoes, ideally sports podiatry. And with a couple of caveats, which is if you've got a shoe that's worked well for you and you've been successful with it, I would stick with it. Now, that's a challenge in this day and age because, like cars, running shoes, every time you turn around, there are new brands and new changes. But I would stick with what's worked well. I wouldn't use money as the only object whatsoever when it comes to, you know, what's the best for you. You know, do you have pronated feet?
No.
Do you have high arches?
No.
Do you have a history of problems? All of these things going into shoe selection. And here's a very important caveat. It's amazing. Probably 50% of runners are not fit properly.
Oh.
Think about that.
My goodness.
The mostly width related. So we don't want to assume what the size would be. We want to be fit properly by certified fitters, which most walking and running shoe establishments have, and that's something that we really want to be paying attention to. You got to be fit properly.
Mm-hmm. And don't go for the, you know, the color too. Just, you know, it may look really pretty, but it's not really the best shoe for you.
True. You know, again, ordering shoes online is another gambit, because if we had five pairs of shoes on the shelf, all size nine, they're different.
Mm.
So sometimes we'll see, we want to try on and wear around what we eventually want to buy. That doesn't mean there aren't any exceptions, but you don't want to be looking to, you know, try to get away with super deals with your running shoes. You want to change your running shoes at least a couple of times a year, Christine, especially if you're running, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. The shock absorbing materials, they do wear down, and you want to be paying attention to that factor also.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. And, you know, Dr. Bob, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm so excited to
have you be a guest monthly on the Sports Doctor segment. And yeah, so stay tuned for next month because we'll be back.
And by the way, it's the Sports Doctor's In segment.
Yes, yes.
So I'll be looking forward to interacting with some of your great followers, Christine. And of course, we'll throw in a pearl or two with you and your competitive running.
Yes.
See you next time.
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Bob.
I had a vision when I was younger to be an Olympic champion also, and to be a businessman, to be a father, and to give back to my community. So those were the four pillars that I wanted to embody my life on. So the first portion of that, I started giving back within the community and different charities, but also was chasing my Olympic dream. We know dreams costs. Sometimes it's a financial sector, sometimes emotional, or physical, but there's a cost to making that dream become a reality, taking that vision and turning it into action. So to be able to prepare, go through struggles and obstacles, and finally showed up at the Olympics, and knowing my Olympic berth was not the 100 meter. That's what I wanted as well. But to be able to realize I'm going to represent our country in a relay, right? How awesome is that? You get to be part of a team. Like one of your first major things is you're representing your country and you're representing a team. But knowing that your individual contribution can turn out to be successful within a team, just like a business, right? So within there, learned a lot of lessons and contributed to that. And to be able to walk into the Olympics with a great team, come out with a gold medal, and stop some of those dream killers out there who says, oh, you're too small, or you chat too much, or whatever, and make it happen, right? And getting that medal around your neck and realizing all the people behind the scenes that people on the forefront don't see that help got you to there.
Thanks for watching. If you have a question or comment about today's episode, go to our website, runwithit.ca. Until next time, run with it.